You're listening to the Gym Class Podcast from 1600 ESPN. It's the Gym Class with Scott Unash and Mark Dukes on 1600 ESPN, KGYM.
Good Monday, everyone. Back in the saddle, southwest side of Cedar Rapids, the KGYM studios. I am Mark Dukes, joined by Isaac L. Zynga for the next hour, leading up to Spencer on Sports, which you can hear from 4 to 6 right here on 1600 ESPN. Scott Unash on state tournament mode. He is at the girls' state tournament most of this week, if not all. And then we'll see about the boys' state tournament. So you're going to hear a lot more of me and even more of Isaac. I know there's some proponents on the text line I've seen that people want Isaac to have his own show. I'm not opposed. Take over, Isaac. How you doing?
I'm doing all right. I do appreciate that there's some people who enjoy hearing what I have to say every now and then, although I assume that's probably few and far between. We'll just go on the safe side there. But I do promise I'll limit the soccer talk to a minimum. I know that was specifically Greg's one request, is minimal soccer talk. So I'll promise you that.
You don't want to talk about Man United's demise?
Oh, my goodness. No, please. Anything else. It is rough out there right now for Man United.
See, I'm clued in.
Yes,
I'm clued in.
I appreciate that. It's been a rough couple of years. I became a fan when I was a kid, and they were super successful. And here we are, and they are arguably going through their worst spell ever as a team. So it's not great.
Now, listeners, you're not going to please everybody. So you just need to go into it with that in mind, Isaac.
Sounds good.
But pleased to have you with me and us for the next hour and most of the week as we tackle a variety of items and many guests on the show throughout the week. Today we have Scott Docterman, the National College Football Reporter for The Athletic, formerly of The Gazette. He was at the NFL Combine. Half a dozen Iowans, I think there. Some Iowa State players showed well. We'll get his thoughts on what transpired and certainly what is happening on the basketball courts for the men and women of the Iowa Hawkeyes, and a lot more. Anxious to talk to Scott. It's March, and so long, February. I know it's maybe get a little dicey Wednesday, Friday, weather-wise, but I don't really focus on that. March, to me, Isaac, is the best month on the sports calendar. You can argue September, October, with the start of football season, NFL, college football, baseball winding down, but to me, March is it. With the NCAA men's and women's basketball tournaments, certainly the NCAA wrestling tournament, Major League Baseball season begins. It'll begin in Japan, but it begins nonetheless this year with the Cubs and Dodgers and a whole lot more, not really related to sports, but daylight savings time in March as well. This weekend, right?
Yeah, yeah. Get a little bit more sun out there.
Have you ever looked at March that way? Is March your favorite month on the calendar?
Yeah, I'd say it's the most exciting month. I think March Madness, the NCAA men's and women's tournaments, is the best sort of playoff format for any or like single elimination tournament out there, or yeah, I guess playoff format, because I'd have it above like NBA playoffs, NHL playoffs are fantastic usually, but it's right up there because the excitement level, you have the Cinderella stories, there's always a lot of storylines going around. I think it's hard to beat March. Obviously, wrestling. I love wrestling.
Mm-hmm.
And you have, obviously, the national championship rounds on Saturday is fantastic. But the blood rounds, the placing rounds, that first session on Saturday, fantastic. I love that, I think, more than anything. I think it is the most fun day for the wrestling tournament because that's where the love for the sport comes through for a lot of guys who maybe have lost their dream of national title, but they're still going for fourth place or fifth place or, you know, whatever place they're at. And you have guys who lost in like round one or two and have wrestled all the way back through WrestleBacks. And it's I think that's the best, one of the best events throughout March.
Yeah, I think it's with the NCAA tournament, since the conclusion of the season with Major League Baseball, it's the start of another season. And two very popular sports, three actually, with wrestling and whatnot. And, you know, there's going to be some NFL stuff. The free agent period is in March. The USFL starts play in March. Maybe we'll have some coaching changes in March.
I'm sure there's some Iowa fans that are a little bit keen on that, I guess.
I don't know. Is March the best month on the sports calendar? You can make a case for, like I said, in the fall when football really gets going. Football is king, whether you like it or not. Baseball winding down and whatnot. But to me, I'm really excited about March. It always have been.
Yeah, it's a good time. Again, most exciting. And you get to highlight some of the small colleges. I think this year, for me in particular, I've fallen for the Drake Bulldogs. I think they've been one of the best stories in college basketball because I had somewhat low expectations for them this year. I know Ben McCollum was a good coach. I don't think there's a massive difference between D1, D2. If you're a good coach, you're a good coach at any level. But I was very surprised to see that he's had this level of success right after Darren DeVries got poached by West Virginia. And so I'm excited to see what they do this month. Hopefully, if they do need an at-large, they get that at-large. Hopefully, they don't even need that, and they win the MVC. But it's been fun to see them. And you get to highlight, again, like really fun stories of smaller colleges.
Yeah, and of course, before you get to March Madness, the basketball tournaments and the wrestling tournament, we'll have the Big Ten wrestling tournament this week. We'll talk to Mark Ironside on Wednesday. Hopefully have some of the pre-seeds out then. We'll talk about that tournament. Damn near as good as the NCAA wrestling tournament. It's going to be crazy. But you got to get there first. One team that's not going to get there is the Iowa men's basketball program. And I don't want to spend a whole lot of time on this because I want to visit with Scott Dockerman about Fran McCaffrey's future. We already got a text about related to his future, but another dismal performance in my mind on Friday night at Northwestern, and really a must-win game when you talk about the Big Ten tournament. Iowa's in bad shape right now, tied for 16th, losing a lot of the tiebreakers now, has to play league leader Michigan State at home and then at Nebraska, and a lot of it is the way in which Iowa has lost 8 road games, all by double digit. Iowa never led for 1 second in Evanston. It was bad.
Yeah, I completely misread this game. I said on Friday I had a little bit of surprising optimism about it. I just thought that the star players, quote-unquote star players, I guess, like Peyton Sanford, Josh Dix, would step up because they'd understand the need for the game and realize that you got to have this one because the other two are unlikely gets, I guess, as far unlikely wins as far as Michigan State and Nebraska go, and they just did not perform. I mean, you have Peyton Sanford shoot 3 for 13, you have Josh Dix shoot for 3 for 12. It just, the team did not come to play. Whether that's just the struggles on the road continue or some sort of mental block for them this year, because it feels like they've been wildly inconsistent every game. It was very disappointing as an Iowa fan to see that sort of level of performance when I thought they were going to step up when the team needed them.
Say what you will about coaching, coaches can't make shots.
Yeah,
and that was very true with Dixon Sanford. Not to call them out, but these are your two, you know, main offensive weapons now with Owen Freeman being out, and they just didn't make shots. And you don't win games when you don't make shots, and you know. Blame it on the coach if you want, but plain and simple, players make plays and players make shots. So on a better note, yesterday, I know you were there, Isaac, the Iowa women concluded the regular season, 20th win of the season, got an 11th seed in the Big Ten tournament, beat Wisconsin for about the 100th state time. But it wasn't easy, was it?
No, I think the first half was a little bit of a struggle. They really started to click in the second half there. I think the atmosphere was really, really good. I think a lot of the seniors got the send-off they deserved as far as what they've meant to the team, particularly like Sita Folter. I think an absolute unsung hero of the team. She really, this past month, I've said, has stepped her game up to another level. Same with Lucy Olsen, who had an impossible task, like Jan Jensen put it, where she had to do her best at filling Caitlin Clark's sort of shoes at that point guard position. And
main ball. By the way, she's a twin of her mother.
Yeah, oh my gosh, they look exactly alike. Jeez. Yeah. And she stepped up this past month as well, took her game to another level. So I think it was a great atmosphere. It's really funny to see Iowa be an 11 seed in the Big Ten tournament, and what they're like, a 6 seed or a 7 seed in the NCAA tournament as far as projections go. But it was a solid game. Hannah Stolke really stood out to me. I think that was one of her better games of her Iowa career. Obviously, you have the 47-49 point game last year, but I think that's right up there with one of her best performances.
I think it's always cool when you have the luxury of putting all the seniors on the floor at the same time, and that happened late in the game. A.J. Ettinger has not seen a whole lot of time, but she was on the floor with the other seniors, Fierbach, and Fierbach may be back. She has an opportunity to come back. We don't know that for sure, but I think and Jan Jensen took advantage of that and allowed that to happen. I think that's – you don't always have that luxury. It could have been a 2 or 3 point game, that was kind of the capper to the game, I think.
Yeah, it was also funny to see at the end of the game, a lot of those seniors got taken out and freshmen were put in right at the end. You had, I think, almost all of the freshmen out there. It was maybe a full 5 of freshmen. It was just funny to me to go from full senior to like a super young squad to see that sort of transition there.
Iowa will play Wednesday night against Wisconsin. Once again, ironically enough, and I think a decent path for Iowa. Did you tell me UCLA is the top seed on that bracket?
Yeah, I think they have. I think they have Ohio State if they were to win against Wisconsin.
That was an overtime game.
That was an overtime game in Ohio State. So you never know as far as that goes. So I think it's a decent path for Iowa. Obviously, UCLA incredibly tough. But Iowa played them tough, so you never know. I don't want to say there's a good chance they win tournament or anything, but they can have a pretty good showing. And I think if they win at least against Wisconsin, they're probably locked in at 6 or 7 for the NCAA tournament.
And a really good year for Jan Jensen. We've gone over, I mean, without Caitlin Clark and without some of the other components of those two Final Four teams, blending the seniors, the transfers, the freshmen all together. There were some bumps, but to win 20 games and finish above 500 in the league, hats off.
Yeah, I think, like you said, getting the freshmen some experience this year and really sticking with them, particularly through January, making sure they continue to get their development as players, as people even, just as athletes, because it's hard to sometimes learn through only wins. Sometimes losses are more meaningful. You hear a lot of athletes say that. And so sticking with those younger players throughout that rough first month of Big Ten play, I think was really crucial for their development and will be really beneficial for the team long-term, 2-3 years.
Strangely enough, unlike previous years, this is the last game for the Iowa women this year in Carver-Hawkeye Arena because it's not going to be a host. So this is the last send-off for this particular group and this particular team. So hats off to the women. We wish them best of luck coming up Wednesday against Wisconsin. And in my mind, I think a couple games are possible, a couple victories possible. I watched USC and UCLA, the rematch of that game, and USC, to me, the best team in the league. Not only Juju Watkins, but Iriafan, tremendous player. She's going to be in the WNBA. I don't have any question in my mind about that. Iowa beat USC, but I think USC is the best team in the league.
Yeah, I think that's fair. They certainly rise to the occasion against the high-level teams. I also think there's something to be said about when Iowa beat them. That was a very emotionally charged game for Iowa, obviously with the jersey retirement. So it might be hard to get Iowa back up to that same sort of motivational level. Not that they can't, but there was a lot of special circumstances that day that would be hard to replicate if they were to meet again at some point. And USC, again, you nailed it. Juju, not only she rises to the occasion whenever she plays UCLA, something against that team or whatever, I guess, but she has fun playing them. So that was a very entertaining game, and I'm excited to see what she does, you know, in March and in the tournament.
3:20 on the gym class. He is Isaac Elzinga. I am Mark Dukes, and with you for the next 40 minutes or so, we're going to talk with Scott Dockerman of The Athletic here at the bottom of the hour after an Emo's Hideaway scoreboard, 70-11 on the text line. June, March, and October. October is the best month on the sports calendar due to the importance of the college games, NFL games, and the MLB playoffs. Yeah, I think you can make that argument.
Yeah, it's totally fair. I think, again, like you said, football is king. That's the only thing March is missing, is some sort of high level. No diss to the USFL or anything like that, but some high level NFL or college games.
67-14. If Iowa wins four games in the tournament, do they jump to a number four? I think it's a stretch.
Wouldn't it be it's possible because it'd have to be Ohio State, UCLA, probably USC.
Mm-hmm.
That's asking a lot, though. Like, that is three incredibly tough opponents. But it wouldn't be impossible. Plus, I don't think that this should count, but I wonder if the committee weighs anything as far as Carver selling out and having really good women's basketball attendance, yeah, and they might favor them for a home game. I don't know if that's, I'm obviously not in the room making decisions, but I do wonder if that's part of their process of selecting top four seeds.
Cyclone Tim, we haven't forgot about your Cyclones. Nice weekend. The men throttled Arizona, really, and the Iowa State women took care of a shorthanded Kansas State team behind Audie Crooks, 36 points. The women's team anyway, begins play in the Big 12 tournament Thursday at approximately 5:30. Cyclones will play either number 10 seed Cincinnati or number 15 Arizona State, and we'll have that for you right here on KGYM. But big win for the Iowa State men, no question about it. Milan Moncilovic was terrific, and it just seemed like the gang was all back together for this one. Granted, it was in Hilton Coliseum where, you know, the home court advantage usually is terrific. It didn't help much against Kansas State in that particular loss, but it just looked to me this Cyclone team, again, the band was back together. The rotations were getting back to their familiar form, and just a very good overall win for the Cyclones.
Yeah, it was. I didn't alleviate some of my fears with Iowa State. I still worry about the number of games that sort of starting or reliable group of players, meaning Curtis Jones, Keyshawn Gilbert, Milan Moncilovic, their starting group has played together against high-level teams. Because I know Milan had that injury, and then they beat Kansas and lost a couple. And then they went on a three-game win streak, but those were all sort of not great Big 12 teams is how I'll put it. And then they had some more injuries and lost a couple games there. So I still worry about Iowa State when it comes to, like, tournament time, how they perform against high-level teams with that whole squad, because there's not – I don't want to say there's not chemistry, but there's still probably some – learning to do as far as that group, just because they have missed so much time. But certainly that win helps alleviate some of that concern I have.
It's not a team you want to see in your bracket in the NCAA tournament. On the flip side of that, the confidence level on how far this team can go, I think, dipped a little bit. Maybe it's on the rise again after this game against Arizona's good team. Ranked in the top 25 until that loss. We'll see. Big game tomorrow against Brigham Young. BYU comes in playing very well. We're going to talk to Rob Gray tomorrow of Cyclone Fanatic about that particular game, about the Cyclones' closing stretch here and going into the Big 12 tournament. So another big game tomorrow as the Big 12 season comes to a close.
Yeah, there are still a lot of positives with, I don't want to say with the injuries or with the absences, I guess you can say. Nate Heisey, I think, has been one of the sort of positives. He had a rough stretch when Milan was out injured as far as shooting goes, and he recently has become a lot more consistent in his three-point shooting in particular. So I think that's a real positive. I also think it feels like Milan Momcilovic has maybe become a little bit more aggressive. That's something that I wish I saw a little bit more his freshman year, is sometimes it feels like he was really hot, but he was a bit tentative. This year it feels like, or right now at least, it feels like he's taking up his aggression to another level, and he's willing to be a main scorer for the team when he has to be.
Eastern Iowa weather from 1600 ESPN.
I'm meteorologist Grayson Freund with your Weather First forecast. Tonight we'll have temperatures in the low to mid 40s. Scattered showers start to develop late and will continue to move in through Tuesday morning. Then the heavier rain will start around noon with a few thunderstorms in the mix through the evening. Afternoon highs will reach the low 50s. Then the rain changes over to snow Tuesday night into Wednesday morning. Winds will be strong, gusting 40 to 50 miles per hour, leading to blowing snow and reduced visibility out on the roads. That's your latest Iowa's News Now Weather First forecast.
Itchy fingers, Isaac.
Yeah, that one's on me. I got there's two mouses over here that I got swapped around there.
Hey, man, I don't want to run that board, and you do a marvelous job.
Hopefully that's the only one this week, I promise, I swear.
Okay. Little update at the Girls State Basketball Tournament in 5A action earlier today. Johnston won its 50th straight game, the number one ranked team in the state. Iowa City Liberty, 73-45. Right now, Cedar Rapids Prairie on the court against Waukee Northwest early on, 3:14 left in the first quarter. Prairie leading it 9-2. After this game, Mount Vernon will be on the floor in Class 3A action against West Marshall. Finally, at college basketball, the Missouri Valley Conference men's tournament field is set. Drake, of course, your number one overall seed. The Bulldogs, well, tough game against a Missouri State team that had only won two conference games, took Drake to overtime, but nevertheless, Drake prevailed. Will be the number one seed in open play Friday against either Southern Illinois or Indiana State. UNI in a seed-determining game against Bradley. Dropped that one at Bradley yesterday. UNI is the 3 seed. The Panthers will also play Friday against either Illinois Chicago or Valparaiso, that game Friday night. But and we'll talk to Kevin Lehman on Thursday on Off the Glass segment about the Mo Valley tournament. He'll be there. And whether Drake needs to win it to get in. I mean, this is a team that's 27-3-3. This is Scott's crusade, Scott Unas's crusade. And I'm not talking out of school here. It has been, if you listen to this show. It's his crusade. Drake wins a couple games, gets to the championship game, 29-4. Is it in the tournament?
I think they should be. I think this is different than Indiana State last year because of a win like Vanderbilt, because of the win against Kansas State, which is not, I believe, Kansas State is not a quad one anymore.
Vanderbilt's really hot.
Yeah, Vanderbilt, that's a really good win for Drake. I mean, and I don't know. I will just say I completely agree with Scott as far as his issues with the net ranking and how it is biased towards some power schools.
The polls don't have anything to do with the net, but today's Associated Press poll, Iowa State at number 10. Drake, if you extended beyond the top 25, will be 29th, receiving more votes than Kansas in today's poll. So that, at least in the minds of AP voters, positive. Of course, Auburn number one, Duke two, Houston three, and Tennessee four, which looks like maybe the top four seeds in the tournament right now.
Most likely. I'm sure some of it will move around with tournament stuff as far as conference tournaments go, but yeah, I think that's probably your top four.
Bottom of the hour, that means the Emo's Hideaway scoreboard brought to you by Emo's Hideaway out on First Avenue behind Johnson Fitness on the east side. Emo's a long time, going on 12 years, a classic local American restaurant. Great food, great drinks, great staff. And stop in at Emo's, opening at 4 o'clock each and every day, except Sunday. On the scoreboard today, Isaac, I usually have four or five items on the scoreboard to bring listeners. Today it's just one. And because it is related to us and it's related to Emo's, I've gotten the permission from the family to announce that Dave Alec has died. He, of course, has been a member of the Pick Six panel for a number of years. I've known him for probably 40, as his family, with Emo's Delicatessen, downtown Cedar Rapids, his sons, Chris and Nate, out at Emo's Hideaway, now, he's, Dave has been a joy, and very sorry to lose him. Got the news yesterday. Dave, of course, he was hospitalized the week of the Super Bowl, and he made picks from his hospital bed that week and enjoyed doing them. And Chris, his son, told me he loved being part of the panel. He did all kinds of research. If you've ever listened to the Pick Six segment, he'd go on for a little while, but he'd offer so many nuggets that none of us would ever have dug up. He just thoroughly enjoyed it. He enjoyed being part of the KGYM family. And I'm here to say for everybody here at KGYM, our thoughts to the Alec family.
Yeah, you obviously knew him better, but in my limited interactions with him on the phone, on the air and stuff like that, seemed like a really great guy. He always had fun with the picks. I know that for sure. It was awesome to have him on. And I know he was also a popular pick as far as our listeners go, picking their choice there.
We'll be back after this.
It's truck month, and Dairy Ford is here for you.
With a huge selection of Mavericks, Rangers, F-150s, and Super Duties.
Here for you!
With many years of experience, serving Iowa City, Cedar Rapids, and the corridor.
Here for you with complimentary pickup and delivery and mobile service.
If you are looking for a quick, enjoyable purchase experience with our best price up front, visit us today and see how Dairy Ford is here for you. It's truck month at Dairy Ford in Iowa City or online at DairyFord.com.
Life's better when you're under our roof because our agents can help you choose insurance to help protect what matters most. Life insurance from American Family Life Insurance Company can help financially protect your loved ones by replacing a portion of your income if you were to pass away. That means your family could have the help they need to continue to pursue their dreams.
Contact Kurt Gustafson or Lana Pierce at 319-363-7214.
Products not available in all states. American Family Life Insurance Company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
American Family Insurance.
You've been hacked. Your thoughts race. What did they get? What do they want? What does this mean for my customers? My business? Stop. Call NCS. They will have a local engineer on site at your business within 24 hours to help. If you get hacked, call NCS at 319-247-7223. Save it to your contacts. 319-247-7223. Network Computer Solutions. Their people are the missing piece to your IT puzzle.
May City Bowl is always a good time, Dukes.
Even when we're not bowling so great, Scott.
Well, May City Bowl does it right. A full-service pro shop for serious bowlers.
And fun for everyone, like Glow Bowling Friday and Saturday nights.
Our team, the Rusty Nails, is in the adult league. But they have leagues for every age and skill.
And you can call ahead for open lane times.
So whether you're leaguers or just want to have fun, it's always a great time at May City Bowl, off Williams Boulevard, Southwest in Cedar Rapids, the official sponsor of Bowling Night in America on the Gym.
Welcome back to the Gym Class. Mark Dukes and Isaac Alzinga with you today. Scott Unash calling a couple games at the Girls State Tournament today, and he'll be in Des Moines most of the week. And right now, again, Prairie against Waukee Northwest, followed by Mount Vernon on the floor against West Marshall coming up at 5 o'clock. Right now, we want to bring in Scott Docterman, National College Football Reporter for The Athletic, formerly The Gazette. Doc, thanks for joining us, man. How are you?
Hey, good, Mark. I hope all is well with you.
Absolutely. Thank you very much. And I don't know if the Combine has always been on my bucket list, but you were there as a national reporter, but also to take a look and listen to some of the Iowa players there. I'm really interested about Caleb Johnson. I know a lot of our listeners are as well. He's kind of looks like maybe a second rounder, maybe a third rounder. I don't know. How'd he do?
Well, the combine is fascinating to me because there's so much that's put on their 40 time and the things that they do, you know, in the underwear Olympics. But pretty much everybody tells me that it's basically what do they do on tape? What have they done? How they performed? And it can sway you a little bit in a direction, but it's not really the overriding factor. And I think in his case, running, you know, a 4.57 40, which is what kind of people are kind of glomming onto, it's not that big of a deal. In fact, it's not a bad time at all for somebody built like him. You know, he's a big physical running back with a long stride and great speed, and you know, maybe his speed at the takeoff wasn't as good, but we know that, and I think everybody else knows that. And the thing was, he closes faster than he gets off. So I think that's really something that he displayed and he did a good job of, and I think he'll be fine. Really, when it comes down to after Ashton Jeanty, who's number one, and there's no number two, you know, in him. But I think the running backs after him, it just kind of depends on what you're looking for, because, you know, Caleb, again, is a physical running back, can really hit the hole hard. We've seen it all last year. You know, and he's got great getaway speed, and, you know, but he's not like a wiggle guy. He's a guy you can use in the passing game, and he wants to be a full, you know, a three down back, and he even said so several times in his interviews, but he's probably not built for that. You probably want to put him with another running back who's probably a little bit better in that regard. But he could still be a very, very much a dominant running back in the NFL. And so I think I compared him to David Johnson, who was at UNI all those years. I think it's the kind of running back he is, and I think that's the kind of impact he can have. So I think he's probably running back two or three with Omarion Hampton from North Carolina. And I think he's a second rounder for sure.
Yeah, I'm glad you, as big a production as it is, Scott, and I'm glad to hear you say maybe it's not that big a deal for some. I mean, I read Penn State tight end Tyler Warren, not very good hand size, not very good wingspan. We heard Brian Bulaga, short arms. Alaric Jackson wasn't drafted. Now he's got a Super Bowl ring. Can these guys play football? That's all I'd want to know, right?
And that's what most of the real scouts want to know, too. The ones that pay more attention to, you know, fitting a certain box. Like if you're a cornerback, you've got to be 6'2 with X number of arms. Or if you're a left tackle, you've got to have 33-plus inch arms. The ones that really put these guys in a box, you better be really accurate with your descriptions, because otherwise you're giving up on good football players, because we've seen it over time and time again. I mean, the most laughable one, you know, and an arm length is something that you kind of do want in a left tackle, because you can keep guys at bay in that position, but it's not the only thing. And I think Will Campbell, who's the tackle that most people believe is number one, got dinged a little bit, and he talked about short arms. Well, Joe Thomas at Wisconsin had, I think, 32.5-inch arms, and he only went and made 10 Pro Bowls, and it was a first-ballot Hall of Famer. So I think it's about can you play or not, and most guys say that. Now, you know, there are some things you do want, but by and large, can you play or not? And most of the guys will find you, or the really good ones. That's why, like, you look at, like, the Baltimore Ravens and Philadelphia Eagles. They generally draft better than everybody else. And we saw it locally with Tyler Linderbaum a few years ago that, you know, oh, his arms were so short. How is he going to play center? Well, he's only been a two-time Pro Bowl center because the Baltimore Ravens drafted him. And then you get other teams like Jacksonville over the years that pass on Aiden Hutchinson to draft a project because he's got explosive get-offs. Well, it hasn't worked for him, has it?
Yeah.
One question I had was about Jay Higgins. He's another guy who hasn't tested well necessarily or didn't test well last week, but he is someone who has some great tape out there, and also I think he plays a little bit faster on the field when in-game action. But how do you view his sort of NFL prospects, and where do you see him fitting in? Does he start out as a sort of situational player and run fits, stuff like that?
Yeah, he's a guy, he compares favorably with his measurables, his statistics, his times to Josie Jewell. I think they even ran the same 40 time, 4.82. And for Jay, he's coming off a hamstring that took a lot of PT for him in the off season. And I talked to him kind of on the side while we were there. They have like a 15-minute podium interview, and then sometimes you can kind of work your way afterwards and talk to him briefly. And I did, just off record. And he said the thing that he was looking at was, he wanted to make sure that the scout saw his best 40 time. So he was going to run there, and then he's going to run at his pro day, whereas he was just going to bench in one place. But people are going to look at Jay and his tape and his production. And then most of all, I mean, his intangibles are off the charts. There's very few players that can bring to a locker room what Jay brings. And so some smart team's going to draft him a little higher than everybody thinks, like a third round guy, and he's going to go in and he's going to start. And maybe early on in his career, they decide, you know what, third down situations, passing situations, we're going to get somebody a little faster, a little bit more sure in pass coverage. But by year two or three, he's going to be just fine. If he stays healthy, he's a guy that's going to be a multi-year starter, 7, 8, 9, 10 years. I mean, Josie's just finished up, I think, with his seventh season, and I'd expect Jay to play just like that. So, and to top it off, though, when he did the three-cone drill, which shows you a lot of, lateral movements, quickness, burst, that's exactly what you want in a linebacker, and he was first in that drill. So I think just because he can't chase somebody like Caleb Johnson down from behind is no reason to look past him.
Scott, how many Hawks, maybe even Cyclones, some Cyclones had some good moments at the Combine. How many what are we looking at for on draft days? I'm sorry.
Yeah, there were 7 Iowa players that went there, 5 Cyclones. 2 Cyclones did have unbelievable moments there. Darian Porter ran a 4.3, and he's almost, 6'3", long-armed cornerback. He probably vaulted himself into that really high category after maybe being considered a third-round guy. He might end up going really high in the second round or even in the first because of that. And Jalen Noel, led the receivers, I think, in both jumping categories, ran a sub-4.4. He's going to go up higher than people thought because he was really highly thought of in the all-star circuit, what he did on the field, and now he's put himself in that position of being a great athlete to go along with it. So I would expect him to be in the second round range along with Jaden Higgins. Iowa State probably gets 4 or 5 draft picks. I think Iowa could get as many as 8. I was really surprised Mason Richmond didn't get a chance to go to Indianapolis, but apparently what it is you need 18 teams to vouch for you to go there, and only 16 said that Mason Richmond should go there. So among those 16 teams, you get somebody in the 6th or 7th round to say, hey, we want this guy. Let's draft him. That's all you need. And I thought Connor Colby had a really good quality combine as well. Running a 5.1 at his size as an interior guard, that's something that people will really look at.
I had one more Iowa player that I was curious about, and that's Luke Lachey. I'm curious about what does him going to Iowa and being a tight end sort of boost his stock at all? Does that provide any more faith for NFL teams or give him sort of the benefit of the doubt? He doesn't have fantastic numbers, obviously had an injury last year, pretty severe injury. But do teams just sort of trust that, you know, he's an Iowa tight end, maybe he's worth a shot?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Iowa's pedigree as tight end U, and the numbers are kind of off the charts. I actually wrote that for tomorrow about which school is tight end U, and over the last 10 years, Iowa is decisively tight end U. I mean, I'll give you a taste here that among the five tight ends already drafted, they have more than 16,000 receiving yards. Number two is Stanford with 8,700, you know. And that, now that doesn't include somebody like Travis Kelce, who – you know, from one team, but just kind of a collection of these teams. Iowa has 100 tight ends, 100 touchdowns from their tight ends drafted, 9 Pro Bowls. So that legacy really benefits any Iowa tight end to make sure that if they aren't drafted, or even if they aren't a starter, you know, we saw what last year with Steven, I can't remember.
Stylianos.
Stylianos, that's right. Yeah, he got an opportunity. He went to camp. He was in camp the whole time and got a lot of looks. So that's going to happen. You know, but Luke's going to get drafted. Luke's a really good blocker. He's shown some good things in the passing game. He's still kind of coming along there when it comes to, you know, last year didn't show a lot, but some of it was coming back from the injury, and some of it was Iowa's quarterback situation. So I would expect him to be probably anywhere from rounds 3 to 5 and, and be the sixth guy drafted since 2015. And I think he's got the opportunity to become, if not a starter right away, certainly a rotational tight end because he does so many things well.
Scott, before we leave football, I want to ask you about Liddell Betts taking the New York Giants running back coaching position. I had the same job and a whole lot more at Iowa. What impact does it have on the Iowa program?
It's significant because he was so good at what he did. What we've seen at the running back position since he got there, he was there for, I think, Tyler Goodson's final year, and how he stabilized it and recruited for it. Kamari Moulton was the guy going to FAU. Jazz Patterson was a guy that nobody really knew about. And both of them had, he really turned them into a really solid 1-2 punch. And I think Kamari Moulton's going to be is going to be the starter. And I had a chance to talk to him for about an hour at the combine, just kind of casually. And the whole thing came together so quickly for him. He was really surprised. He doesn't know Giants clothes or anything yet. He just went straight from Iowa to the combine. But that's also a position that Iowa can find a good running backs coach, and he can and replace him and do well. But Liddell is a terrific coach, and what he did with Caleb Johnson this year really proved it, because Caleb was 80% there for his first 2 years. What he needed to do was learn how to finish runs and be more explosive with a mid-zone run. And they tweaked the run to where he ran more or less an old-school off-tackle instead of the outside slant, and it fit him perfectly. And then he was able to really use that. And that's really Liddell. And then also coaching him to use his pads more because, he is so big and physical. And so Liddell's experience with the NFL, it's going to be tough to replicate, but it's not impossible. So I think as long as they get, I think they'll find somebody for that role and be pretty good.
Scott, those of us in the business these days are asked a lot about Fran McCaffrey. I know it has happened with me, and it's probably exponentially true with you. My answer is I don't know. What Fran McCaffrey's situation is going to be. I don't know what Beth Getz thinks. I don't know what Fran McCaffrey thinks about his future as a coach. Do you?
I have not spoken to Fran about that, but I will say that there are kind of two lines that I've been looking at here with Iowa men's basketball. One is, I think, based on play on the floor, that Fran McCaffrey has earned the right to have a subpar season. Since the 2012-13 season, going into this year, only Iowa and Michigan State were the only two programs in the Big Ten to have one losing season. The rest of them had more. That means that they've had a pretty good run of things in the Big Ten, where they've been at least 9-9 or 10-10, and that's tough to do. It's an incredibly difficult league, and he's done it with some really good talent that he's cultivated, developed, and he's done it with talent that most people overlook. But as we know, he has not gotten to the Sweet 16, and there haven't been a lot of highs either. And that's probably what has frustrated most of the fans, that he hasn't been able to capitalize on the years where they've had incredible talent. Luca Garza, the Murray brothers, Joe Wieskamp, Jordan Bohannon, that they haven't been able to take that next step. And so thus we're left with 97 teams have been to the Sweet 16 since Iowa last went there. But more so than anything, Big Ten basketball and Big Ten sports are a business. And when your average scan, I haven't caught up since the Oregon and Washington games, is 5,216 tickets scanned per game, when you have the lowest paid attendance since at least 1965 at 9,091, and only 57% of those fans show up, you've got a problem. You've got a major gap and disconnect between Iowa's fans and Iowa's men's basketball program. That absolutely has to change, because that is one of two programs that make money at Iowa. And if you can't bring more fans in to at least watch the game, let alone buy tickets to them, then it doesn't matter what you do on the floor. So that is why I think it's more likely than not that there will be a change in the Iowa men's basketball program. But, you know, how that happens, what Fran thinks about it, is it going to be stepping away? Is it going to be a buyout, what retirement of sorts? That I don't know. But I think it would be surprising to me if all comes back and all is well, because all is not well for the Iowa men's basketball program.
On the other end of the spectrum, you have the Iowa women, who have had a really solid season under Jan Jensen in her first year, 20 wins. And, you know, they've had some competitive losses, I guess you can say, against some high-level teams. What do you make of their sort of chances to do anything in March? But also, what have you made of their season this year, coming off of all they lost last year?
I think it's been an incredible season for her and for this program, based on what we saw of them at the at the midpoint, when they were 2-6 in the Big Ten, and it looked like we weren't sure if they were even going to be able to make the Big Ten tournament, to finish with winning eight out of their 10 games. One of the losses was in overtime. The other was by 2 points to a team that was, it's been ranked in the top five all year. I think it shows, incredible resolve, great coaching, and, an ability to really change the dynamic of the team in a way that needs to be respected. I mean, I remember after one of their losses, I wrote a column last May, that this was the smartest decision Beth Getz can make, which was just merely to elevate Jan Jensen to the head coaching job. And then I had people sending me my own column back and, blasting me for it after some of the losses. And I'm thinking, they lost four starters from a team that went to the national title game, including the best player in college basketball history. And you're wanting to throw everybody out and be angry about it. And here, what we saw were players that you brought in one player who has had a tremendous last month of the year. You had all these role players that had to expand their roles. They're still getting used to each other. And you had four freshmen who were playing a lot. And it takes time to get used to it. And they've really shown an ability to grow. I mean, what they do in March, it's going to be about matchups. They're probably the best 11 seed that we'll ever see in either the men's or women's tournament, because I think they can go far. But if not, they're still going to be a very dangerous 6, 7, 8 seed in the women's tournament to where when somebody looks at them and sees them on the bracket, they're going to go, no, we can't play them. So I think that they've got a chance to do some damage. In no way, shape, or form am I predict them to go to the Final Four. But I think that if they're an 8 seed and they're playing a 1, that is the last 8 seed and what 1 will want to see.
Scott, joy to have you with us. Great stuff as usual, and safe travels wherever you're headed.
Thanks so much. I appreciate it. And heading back to Indy next week, so we'll see what happens there.
Sounds great, Scott. Thank you very much. Yeah. Scott Dockerman of The Athletic joining us, Mark and Isaac, today. Let's take our final break, and we'll be back to wrap things up.
I'm Mary Neubauer with the Iowa Lottery. March is National Problem Gambling Awareness Month when we highlight and remind Iowans that help is always available 24/7 here in our state.
And I'm Katie B. with the Iowa Department of Health and Human Services. Visit yourlifeiowa.org to learn more about problem gambling. Start the conversation today by text, live chat, or by calling 1-800-BETS-OFF.
It's free and confidential.
And it's something you can do anytime.
Farming's hard. To feed the world, farmers have to work the land, brave the elements, and fight the battle against weeds. Weeds reduce crop yields, so prices go up and everybody gets less to eat. But 50 years ago, farmers got a new tool to fight weeds, glyphosate. It kills weeds while protecting the harvest. Time and again, it has been approved by the EPA and by leading regulatory bodies around the world. It helps enable practices that reduce erosion and keep soil healthy, which is good for the earth. Farming's hard, but it's a little easier with glyphosate. Learn more at go.bayer.com/glyphosate. Paid for by
This is a test of the emergency alert system. This concludes this test of the emergency alert system.
Texting enrolls you into reoccurring automated text messages. Consent not required to purchase. Message and data rates may apply.
Hey, Dan, how you doing? Haven't seen you around the gym for a while.
Yeah, I've really fallen off. Since I turned 40, I just don't get the results I used to get.
Could be lower testosterone.
Lower T?
Yeah, I went through it a while back. Once you hit 40, your body has less free testosterone. I got Nugenix Total T, and it's made a huge difference for me.
I've seen that ad on TV. Is it for real?
Oh, yeah. The key ingredient is something called Testnor, which helps boost free and total testosterone levels to help you trim up and stay lean.
And it's made a difference for you?
Man, I feel like I'm in my 20s again. At work, in the gym, and in the bedroom.
Are they still giving out complimentary bottles for people to try it for themselves?
Yeah, you just need to send them a text.
Text EQUAL to 321-321 right now for your complimentary bottle of Nugenix Total T, the number one selling testosterone booster at GNC. Plus, text now and we'll include a bottle of Nugenix Thermo, our most powerful fat incinerator ever, to help you get back into shape fast, absolutely free. Text EQUAL to 321-321. That's equal to 321-321.
Time for a wrap on the gym class for today anyway. We'll be back tomorrow with Rob Gray of Cyclone Fanatic talking about Iowa State's big game tomorrow night against Brigham Young. Thanks to Scott Dockerman of The Athletic for weighing in with us today. Thank you to Isaac Elzinga. We're going to be partners in crime for most of the week, dude.
Yeah, hopefully we'll have Scott back tomorrow. We'll see. Hopefully everything works out, though.
Sounds good. Stay tuned. Spencer on Sports up next till 6 o'clock.
A Progressive Home and Auto Bundle can protect you round the clock, but we can't protect you from those pain.